park with the kids. They don't go to school functions with the kids. They don't take the kids in a weekend for a hamburger. It is affecting themselves, their family, and their communities to a great extent.
I wanted to ask you, Teresa, there are some farm worker advocacy groups, for instance, like the group Somos Poder del Pueblo, We Are the Power of the People, that are calling for a more militant response, possibly a nationwide strike of farm workers in response to Trump's attacks. And they've circled the dates of July 16th to the 18th. What is the United Farm Workers' view of this kind of action at this point?
Involved in this action. Look, we empower workers to do what they think it is the best thing to do to protect their rights. We know from experience, and you know our history, that a strike takes a lot of discipline, a lot of work and engagement, a lot of commitment, and a lot of time to plan and organize. So, although we see what they're doing, this is not something that we're involved. If we ever get to a point where we're going to do that, it would take a lot of planning, looking at the pros and cons under the circumstances. So, all I'm asking is whoever's going to be out there to just be careful. We don't want these people that are fighting for others to be retaliated against and detained by ICE.
Teresa de Romero, we want to thank you for being with us. Longtime labor leader, president of the United Farm Workers. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Jazz Society of Oregon, presenting the 45th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival. Friday, July 18th through Sunday, July 20th at Cathedral Park under the St. John's Bridge in North Portland. Featuring local jazz, blues, soul, and Latin artists such as the Revival Brothers Band, McTuff, Tezetta Band, and more. More information at jazzorgan.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:02 a.m. Next up is PDX Progressive Talk Radio.
The Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring. Bullets loading, you're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Don't you understand what I'm trying to say? Can't you feel the fears I'm feeling today? If the button is pushed, there's no running away. There'll be no one to save with the world in a grave. Take a look around you, boy. It's bound to scare you, boy. And you tell me. Yeah.
got my blood so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here.
Good morning, Portland. Thank you for listening to 90.7 KBOO.FM. You are listening to PDX Progressive Talk Radio, and it is July 16th. If you're listening live, it's July 16th, 2025. I'm so happy to be able to bring you information you can get only on KBOO Community Radio. A lot has happened and continues to happen across the Pacific Northwest with ICE protests and other protests going on across the nation. We will talk about the protests in honor of John Lewis later on. But first, I have an interview I want to play for you. Brandi Johnson, if you've listened for a while, at least over the past couple of months, Brandi Johnson is the executive director of Love One Community, and she's also the executive director. This woman is phenomenal. She's also executive director of the Father's Heart in Oregon City. It's a day center. It's the only day center in Oregon City that services thousands of people every year. And I had the opportunity to record a interview with her yesterday. If you follow on social, you've already seen the interview, but for the many who don't follow us on social, I'm going to have Ty. Oh, by the way, Ty is my engineer, and he has been for a while. And so when you call in, you're going to be talking to Ty. Be nice to him. He's a good man. And he is going to turn on that interview for me here in just a second. It's me and Brandi Johnson talking about the Father's Heart in Oregon City yesterday morning. So enjoy, and I'm going to open up the phones when it comes back. It's about a 30-minute interview.
Brandi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Sherry?
I'm awesome. It's been a tough morning, but we won't go into that. One of those days.
I feel that. Yep, I feel that for sure.
Thank you for joining me.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
For our KBOO listeners, I'm interviewing and welcoming Brandi Johnson from the Father's Heart. She's the executive director. Can you give us a little bit of a rundown about the origin stories of the Father's Heart and how you became affiliated with them?
Absolutely. So the Father's Heart was founded in 1999 by Terry Gant. She was on a search for her brother. She knew he was living on the streets somewhere, Clackamas, Multnomah County. And she would go out and look for him and meet folks and spend time with them, get to know them. And she got a big van, and she would load it up with supplies, and she just started doing street outreach. And that morphed into the day center. She had used a sorry, it's been a morning for me too, so I'm collecting my thoughts. She had a space in an industrial area, a warehouse that she used, and she would transport folks there, help them get a shower, get a meal, get a clean set of clothes, and then moved into the building that we're now located in Oregon City, which is actually in a residential neighborhood. And it's not the best location for the services we provide, and as much as we've grown over the last several years, and the need has increased, but that was a great spot at the time, and so that's kind of how we've ended up where we're at. But I actually pulled up a quote from Terry. Her husband Marty sent me this vision that Terry had written out, and there's just a little snippet that I think really captures Terry's heart and the heart that folks find when they come to the day center. So she said, "The vision God gave me for TFH is to be the hands and feet of Jesus to anyone who enters our doors. My prayer is that anyone and everyone who enters will feel the love and presence of Jesus. It's not a place where we force Jesus on people, but rather a place where we are Jesus to people." And that very much embodies the work that we do there. We don't ask folks what their faith journey, you know, looks like. There's no expectation. This is not intended to be a transactional thing. We meet basic needs. We meet folks right where they're at, and we just love people literally and figuratively right where they're at. It might be in the parking lot, someone having a tough day, and we go and sit with them. It might be someone inside, you know, having a mental health crisis and in need of a shower. And you just never know what conversation you're going to have or what that looks like. So that's about the day center. And then we have some other programs and services. But I even took a look at our 2024 numbers. Our day center is the only Monday through Friday day center in Clackamas County, specifically mm-hmm. for folks experiencing houselessness. Mm-hmm. I know our last point in time count, the numbers were about 550, give or take, but that is not accurate. There's far more folks. It's hard to capture, you know, an accurate count. We do the best that we can. But last year we provided service to with 27,000 check-ins.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's incredible.
We averaged 108 people a day.
Wow.
Already this year, we're up to 125. We provided 3,000 showers, 54,000 meals, and about 250 medical visits.
Does the county, I mean, this isn't on the list of questions, but does the county, can the county even visualize the need in these numbers?
Yes. And they do. Yes. We're very fortunate in Clackamas County. I don't have experience in other counties, so I'm not, you know, speaking to that, but I know that we're very fortunate in Clackamas County because our commissioners come and tour our day center. They go to our transitional housing program site. They're very engaged with what's happening and what the need is, and the rural communities, you know, experiencing housing instability. A lot of folks are doubled up, and what scarce resources look like, especially with the reduction in access to food and things. And our county staff very much partner with us. Now, there's always the hiccups and the frustrations and the barriers that come with systems and politics and all of that. And that's very real. But as individuals and as partners, our county staff and leadership are very collaborative.
Thank you for your generosity. What core values guide your team when serving the unhoused and vulnerable communities in Clackamas County?
Very much meeting people where they're at, kind of what I alluded to earlier. It could be anything from, I remember one of my first experiences, I saw someone at one of our laundry events and was thinking, oh, they need X, Y, and Z. And when I talked with them and listened, when I asked, when I led with curiosity, it was, I could really use some dry shoes and something to eat. And so meeting those needs, those basic essential needs, you know, food, water, safe place to rest, to sleep, those things, those are the values that guide our team. How can we meet people where they're at, meet those needs, and then build that relationship to work with them on whatever next steps they might be ready for. And every staff meeting, but every time our teams are together, I always remind folks, lead with curiosity. Lead with curiosity. We don't know the whole picture. And it happened to me just the other day. I made an assessment and I said something and I didn't lead with curiosity. And it bit me in the ass. And I was like, of course it did. Because I wasn't in that headspace. So those I would say are the core values. Loving people, just like what Terry said. We're not expecting anything from folks. We're just there to love on people and to meet those needs, because building those relationships and building that trust is how we can move forward, how we can help folks stabilize and move into somewhere to live indoors and meet those needs.
For someone walking through the doors for the first time, what might their experience look like?
I loved this question, and I actually noted it's a little chaotic. It's well-organized chaos, but it is a little bit overwhelming. It's just under 6,000 square feet. And when we've got that many folks milling through getting services, plus our 7 to 10 staff and another 5 to 10 volunteers, it's pretty packed. We also have a high school internship program. And so during the summer, we are super fortunate to have 4 amazing high school students working for us. Honestly, our folks sometimes engage with them better than they do with our staff and our adult volunteers. And it's just this beautiful thing to watch. And the team we have, the interns are some of the most emotionally mature. People sign in, we check them in, make sure that they get food, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or mealtime, or if they're just hungry, we have food available. We have signups for showers, and they can do a shower, clothing exchange. They shop for sizes. We have little forms where they can say, like, I'd like shorts or long pants, or, you know, what their comfort level is and what their size is, and make sure that they get some clean clothes, a safe place to rest. We have a room dedicated for rest. It's a quiet space with sleeping mats. We have a little computer lab where folks can check their email and make some phone calls, do stuff like that. We have space for our coordinated housing access assessments to happen. One of our staff does that, and not only does the assessments, but does the regular check-ins to keep people active in the system. We have community partners who come on site, and as I mentioned, you know, that it's very tight space in there, so we can't have a lot of community partners at the same time, but each day we usually have a different one. We partner with 4D Recovery, and actually they're usually milling around the building several times a week. DHS comes and helps folks sign up for food stamps and SNAP benefits and all of that. We have some medical providers who come on site and do check-ins with folks and can help them get the care that they need. So it's really very, it's a community hub.
Right on. Very good. So what can you share a story of us that captures the heart of the work that you and your team are doing at the moment? Maybe the mad lady.
the mad lady. Yes. She actually went through peer support training and became one of our staff. but there's another story I wanted to send or to share. That's in process, right? And I think that's reflective of all the folks that we're working with, because it's not like the wrapped up with a bow, tidy, you know, everything's all done. When folks carry that much trauma and have experienced so many challenges and various things. So we have an individual that we had been engaging with. Gosh, I first met this person before COVID at some of our laundry events. And all of our team was just taken with her. And she's just been a light every time I see her. Been outside this whole time, working hard to get housing, and met a partner. Found out she was pregnant. It's been about 11 months ago. Stopped using substances immediately. And just did double duty, getting connected to all the resources she possibly could. We were able to support her through some court stuff that was lingering from several years back, that, you know, that stuff doesn't just go away. And so it was like,
not
all right,
Clackamas County.
Yes. Yes. So we supported with that. We're able to get them into our transitional housing program. So in addition to the day center, we have a transitional housing program where we help folks stabilize and get connected to resources and then move into housing and a care coordination team. So that was established as a result of so many of the folks that we've been working with having really high medical, intense medical needs, high mental health needs, and we needed a team to be able to help support that. And even, you know, applying for Social Security and all the various systems, processes that are required to get some of the services that many folks need. And so we were able to bring her into our transitional housing program and wrap around and support her. And she just recently delivered a very healthy baby. And our team is so excited and just love spending time holding that little precious baby and supporting mom and dad and just being for them as they, you know, grow as a family, figure out what that's like, and then move into their next steps. So just getting to be a part of hopefully breaking the cycle is really impactful for us as a team.
Awesome. What a great story. Thank you for sharing that. That's fabulous. Which also kind of leads into the next one, because a successful family needs to have opportunities in areas that most may not at this point. So what are some of the biggest systemic barriers your guests face when trying to exit homelessness?
So that it's, if I had to choose just one thing, it's
like
that
the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, the biggest is a safe place to sleep at night. And I realize that's not necessarily a systemic barrier, but it's a barrier to even getting to the systems piece of it, is a safe place to sleep at night so that, because I know for me, if I don't get a good night's sleep, I struggle the next day. But we're talking about folks who consistently aren't getting the sleep that they need, coupled with usually medical or mental health or substance use or all of it. And so not having a safe place to sleep to at least stabilize and get rest. And then the next step would be, let's get a doctor appointment. Let's get a mental health appointment. Let's talk about what treatment might look like. And so with those things, even, and I think how people also are experiencing this is the wait time for access to all of those things as well.
And the cost.
Yes.
The federal government is looking at taking Medicaid away. So that offers another layer of systemic issue.
Sherry, I don't even know what to say about that. It's what keeps me up at night. I mean, taking away Medicaid, I just don't know. I mean, it's already, we don't have enough. Our folks don't have enough. I talked to one guy the other day, and his food stamps are $18 a month.
The guy's homeless.
Yeah. I talked to somebody last night at one of our laundry events, and he was sharing that he found a soup that he really likes. It's $2 a can. And we were talking about how much protein, how much fiber, you know, how long it keeps him full, and that when it's hot, it tastes good cold. So he eats it right out of the can without warming it up. And he goes, sometimes that's the only thing I eat all day, but for $2, that's, you know, a value. So yeah, it's, sorry, stumbling over my words, but it's the lack of enough resources, enough food, enough. And then I would say another thing is when someone has medical needs, they can go to the hospital, go to the doctor. But if they have medical and mental health, right, our EDs and other, you know, primary care offices aren't staffed or equipped to meet those mental health needs necessarily, right? And then if you've got substance use also, you've got somebody going through withdrawals, it's like it's the perfect storm. And there's little to no options for one place for someone to go to get all of their needs met holistically.
Right. Yeah.
And that's really the majority of the population that we're working with.
Well, which goes to the next question. If you had a chance to speak directly to policymakers, what would you ask for on behalf of the people that you serve?
So, yeah. For me, it's even more about the education piece of it, to understand the broader systems and why they need to fit together versus here's our one lane, this is what we're focused on, this is how you all as providers need to implement it. But it's not taking into account the restrictions or the opportunities to either pair or figure out how we navigate them, if that makes sense. So like homelessness is a very broad issue, but at the end of the day, it's each individual, and one size, you know, plan doesn't fit everybody. As much as that would be amazing, it doesn't. We see it in our school systems, you know, and we certainly see it here. And so to say, gosh, I'm not trying to like throw anybody under the bus or anything negative, but to say like you can only spend X number of dollars on say like food or gas or vehicle repair for this person, and I get it because there's limited funds, so there has to be some bumpers in place, but to say like this person can only have up to a certain percentage of the value of their vehicle to repaired, you know, but if we happen to know that this person, if they can get their vehicle repaired, they have a plan to drive back to, say, Indiana to be reunite with family or whatever. And that's where we can use some of our funds. And then we rely on the community and private donations to make the rest. But if we could just, without restriction, like there has to be a level of trust. Here we go. There has to be a level of trust with the service providers to be able to decide how to support the people versus all of the bureaucracy over the top of it that's preventing us from doing the work that we know that works.
And you have said that in every conversation, pretty much. I have interviewed you, this is number three. I have interviewed you three times. And in every interview, that is a core statement you make. When are they going to hear you? And I'm going to try and get this in front of as many people as possible. When are they going to hear you?
I adore you. Thank you. And I see you have your buddy with you.
Yeah. Oh, Buster. For those of you not seeing the Quaker parrot, he demanded to be in here.
That's excellent. So
how does collaboration with churches, nonprofits, or businesses shape your outreach and impact?
We could not do it without all of those groups and individuals. So our day center, as I mentioned, we have about 7 to 10 staff regularly, but we also rely on volunteers to run the day center because it's not contracted. There's no dedicated funding other than private donations and you know things like that. Some of our staff are contracted. I do want to say that covered in contracts, but the operations. And we have dedicated volunteers. We have husband and wife teams that come in. We have Kent and Debbie on Mondays, and we have other folks. And so everybody picks their day and they do their thing. And like some might do breakfast and some might do lunch or someone might bring in lunch. And so that's a huge piece of what keeps us running. But we also so appreciate the community support. We have folks who will say, hey, what do you need? I have connections. We just got yesterday, I believe, donated 2 chest freezers. Which is awesome. A game changer. Our staff person, Elijah, who oversees all of the food, just chaos and does such an amazing job. He's got it. It's well run, organized, and having two freezers to dedicate to proteins has been a game changer for what we can provide for folks. Because we also do food boxes for the folks that we house. We've housed several hundred people over the last couple of years, and a lot of that looks like continuing to support them to be successful, and food boxes are a huge piece of it. So, you know, folks, when they want to donate things, people come by all day, every day, dropping off clothes. That's how we keep people clothed. We have a volunteer, I'm going to share, Larry. He's in his mid to late 80s, and he comes, I think he's up to two times a week now, but he's there all day, dedicated in our little laundry space, and he washes all of the clothing from all of the showers we do. He washes all of our, you know, our towels and our various other things, and he sits there and does this crossword and keeps that washer and dryer going all day long. He is like faithful and amazing. So it takes our whole community to do this work, and it makes a difference when people come in and see what it looks like.
Right. So I have one last question for you, and I actually have a couple more, but we'll do that offline. So what do you wish the community members understood about the realities of homelessness in Clackamas County?
I wish that, going back to leading with curiosity, that rather than making assessments, and I understand where some of this comes from, it's that self-protection, it's the othering, right? To not be grouped with folks that are perceived to be unsafe or causing problems. But I wish that folks understood that the majority of the folks we're working with are from Clackamas County. They grew up here, they're raised here, they have family here, they have ties here. People don't usually go far from home. Recently, and you might have seen this on Facebook, but recently one of the windows of the elevator got punched out, and the comments right away were, and I actually wrote them down. One, there were a lot, but a few. I recommend public punishment. Portland is getting too close to home. Adults don't teach their kids anything anymore. Something about, it's probably just some punk, you know, and blaming the houseless community. And it was interesting to me because I have a really good relationship with the Downtown Oregon City Association. Mm-hmm. And when things are going on downtown, I get texts or phone calls and our team responds right away. And so they had sent a photo of the individual, and right away I recognized who it was. It's someone I've worked with for a very long time, and I'm actually in touch with his mom multiple times a week. She's very concerned, but she's not in a space to be able to support him. And it was a mental health crisis. He has lived here for years and years and years. He is well loved by all of our staff, and to make the assessment that it was someone that intended to do harm, or, you know, it was just a result of drugs is oversimplifying the issue. And of course, none of us want the elevator windows broken out, right? That's also why we've been coordinating with his care team to help him get the support he needs. And I can't really go into details, but it's been pretty intense, and we have regular case conferencing. But again, that goes to what resources are available that we could actually help get him into. And the answer has been, there just haven't been. We don't have good options. So anyway, I would just love for our community members to lead with curiosity and come take a look at what the day center looks like. It's interesting because people are like, I don't know what they think, but certainly that it's, we've had people say, no, it's scary, it's not safe, it's whatever. We have puppies and, you know, kiddos, and it's a warm, welcoming place. It's not scary. And usually when people come in, they're like, I had no idea, this is great. Like, and Stephanie and I love giving tours and sharing that with people. It's really impactful. So we're not a closed off, you know, thing. We love community engagement and support, and I understand the impact of homelessness on the community. It's a lot. So,
but what I would also add is that these are your neighbors, right? And there's this statement that people used to live by, love thy neighbor, right? And so, yes. Because, and most of the homeless people, having been homeless myself, most of the homeless people keep to themselves. By and large, you have mental issue breakdowns now and then, and I hope he gets the help that he needs, like, expeditiously. And, you know, restitution is probably in order, but you need to treat these people like they're your neighbor.
Yeah.
When did we become such a cold, thoughtless society? I just don't get it.
It also makes our lives so much richer, right? Like, if we go to the store and we see somebody we know and we're like, oh, hey, Sherry, at the checkout line, right?
Right.
The other day, my son and I were, we just got ice cream at Baskin Robbins, and we're driving through the parking lot and saw one of our folks, and it was super hot. It was over the weekend. I was like, oh, hey, look, there's so-and-so. My son is often at the day center. And so I was like, hey, can you go run him some water? And he ran right over and said hi. But to be able to address someone by their name.
Yeah.
And it just, it makes the community feel smaller, warmer, more friendly.
Like a community.
Right. I grew up in a very small town. And that's always how it was. So why should it be any different?
Your heart amazes me. And I'm going to conclude the interview for now and stop recording. But hang tight with me.
So that was my interview with Brandy Johnson and the Father's Heart location in Oregon City. Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more about the Father's Heart and the work that they do, you can donate, you can volunteer. Go to T as in Tom, F as in Family. Well, T is in the, S, F as in Fathers, H as in Heart, streetministry.com. That's TFH streetministry.com. Or you can Google the Father's Heart, Oregon City, and it will come up with their Google business profile. So there's a whole story about them. Through your support or their funder, their donor support, the Father's Heart Ministry feeds over 10,000 people a year and provides 6,000 free showers with clothing exchange. You're making a difference if you are involved, and you are certainly changing lives. You are also helping smooth the impact on the local community. By offering a safe and peaceful place that people who are unsheltered in our neighborhoods can come to and have their basic immediate needs met. So I am opening up the phone lines. You can call at 503-231-8187. Ty is going to be answering the phone, so be nice to him. I appreciate that. The other thing on my, and I want to thank Brandy Johnson and Lisa Holcomb and the people at the Family's Heart, or the Father's Heart location in Oregon City, for their generosity and kindness. I actually have a series coming forth that you'll hear more about in the coming month or so. What I wanted to talk with you about now while we wait for phone calls is USA Today is reporting a string of good trouble protests across the nation. You can find it on the USA Today website. I'll quote, tens of thousands of people are expected to turn out across the country this week for a day of action protesting President Donald Trump's administration and honoring the legacy of late Congressman and civil rights icon John Lewis. So the protests are called Good Trouble Lives On, and they're expected to take place in dozens of cities on July 17th, so tomorrow. And that's 5 years to the day since John Lewis's death. The 17-term congressman, he was in office for 17 terms. That's incredible. He led some of the most seminal demonstrations during the civil rights movement, popularized the phrase Good Trouble, which I tend to use now and then, thanks to him. When speaking of nonviolent protests and acts of civil disobedience as a way to challenge infringement on civil rights. And for those who don't know, civil rights doesn't just point to people of color. It points to basic human rights, right? For LGBT, people of color, women, anyone who's disenfranchised in our society. And it looks like I have a phone call. Hi, Edie.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear.
I wish I could just hug both of you.
Oh.
I'm hoping that we can really amplify and celebrate the fact that when we treat others a certain way, that is how we create and treat ourselves and our world.
Yep.
And that's the energy we give ourselves. I would much rather feel loved and loving, because that gives me peace and clarity and joy and freedom and inspiration and trust and safety and clarity on the answers I need to be safe, be healthy, be good. And it feels good to be good and do good. So
yes.
We want to really let folks know that, I mean, yeah, there are multiple reasons why folks may want to volunteer or not, but if we really get back to being true to who we are, what really feeds our soul, our heart and mind, it's being kind. That's the kindest thing we can do to ourselves, is to be kind to others. The fairest thing we can do for ourselves, the most healing thing we can do for ourselves, is to be fair and just for others with mercy and grace.
Yeah.
And that is what gives us the power and the courage to endure. That's what gives us beyond hope, but to give us that real inner strength. And that is what protects us from loneliness and confusion and fear and internal conflict and distrust. But when we're kind, and when we're kind, that's when we can get curious because we feel safe. But we're not curious. We're not caringly empathetic. We're not flexible. We're not courageous when we tell ourselves lies that scare us. And so let's stick with the truth and the power of it. It doesn't, it's not toxic positivity, fake, smiley. It's not avoidance. It's not distraction. It's not like, oh, I'm the goody-goody superior to you, and makes me feel good being the white rescuer. No, it's the real kindness. So we're all interconnected. And when I see your wholeness and your goodness, it helps me be more whole and more good. Let's really celebrate that with every story.
Yeah.
Let's end with that. Yes, I can do it. It feels good. It's the answer I need. The antidote to despair is activism with kindness.
Right. Agreed.
The good trouble that this weekend, as our lives are about. We're on the planet to heal ourselves. Each person is in our life for a teacher to heal us and practice for us to be our best self. We're healing our ancestors. We're working on the healing work and prayers and courage and sacrifice that they gave us.
Yep.
And we're to be the good ancestors. We are making a difference. We are making the world better. We talked earlier on the radio, there was talk about nuclear holocaust and growing fascism and climate change. And that all comes from believing scary stories of greed and selfishness and othering others.
Yeah.
And it's all solved when we see we're in this together as one healing each other love.
But how do we, I mean, we can, so that interview is on our Substack, on our Facebook, on our TikTok. It's all over. I got it all over everywhere I could possibly get it. It's on YouTube. You heard it off of YouTube, right? My audience is still small, and I have the opportunity here at KBOO to expand that audience, okay? But how do we get in front of the greedy, self-interested leaders of the world and say, stop, this can't go on. We need to take care of each other and our communities.
I think we start with ourselves and where we're at. We're given the opportunities that we have the strength and the ability and the experience to make the best of. And if I am so caring and good that I inspire others, that story gets out there, and I don't have to ever talk with Donald Trump. So right. That love, that truth, that prayer makes a difference.
But they're the decision makers. They're the decision makers. They're the ones who are propagating war.
We are the decision makers in our own lives, and we make a difference where we're at. And the reason why, there's this, I forgot his name,
Edie?
You have to not say that they're distant and they're far away, because if we think they're too far away in power, too far away in time, too far away in distance, too far away in access and in money, then we're disempowering ourselves.
True.
But there's nothing more powerful than love and joy, and we can do it.
Thank you.
We just have to start with the realistic here and now, and not do the yeah, but sabotaging ourselves.
You are fabulous. You have such great insight, and I really appreciate you. I have to go because I have another call, but thank you so much. Oh, Santiago. Hello, sir. Santiago's
Good
a regular.
Morning, Carrie. How are you?
Okay. How are you, sir?
Good.
Edie was all a regular.
Right. Trying to beat the heat.
Edie was a regular, too, when Althea and Tammy had their show. Edie called quite often. I liked her. She's a nice lady. Anyway, on to Santiago.
I really appreciate the interview with the folks out in Oregon City. Homelessness is something that's really close to my heart. I've been homeless myself, and it's really good to hear that perspective to kind of get people out of their own minds. But I was gonna with the John Lewis protest, doing the Good Trouble. I think it's really important to remember that, when John Lewis was protesting, when the civil rights movement was happening, it was a group of people who were not citizens, it's still true even to this day. Fundamentally, we've been, the nation is segregated everywhere except for on paper.
Yeah.
And, because the wounds have never really been healed. Malcolm X talked a lot about that, said that you don't heal a wound by pulling the knife out an inch or 2 inches or 3 inches or even just pulling it out. You heal the wound by pulling out the knife and bandaging it up and caring for it. And, he was talking about, white supremacy. He said, white folks don't even recognize that the knife, won't even acknowledge that the knife is there.
Right.
And we've kind of, and we've been, and, you know, and especially when you talk about the, particularly how, how civil rights have been handled since it was passed, it's been treated as if it's been a done deal. And it has, and then especially after Barack Obama became president, conservatives are like, well, you got a black president. You should be happy about that. And
statement. I've always thought that was
ridiculous statement too. But I mean, the fact of the matter is that we've only, black and brown folks have only been able truly in many ways to just participate in the crimes of empire. but not really having, on a whole, like an actual level of self-determination, which was the difference between civil rights and Black liberation. Because Black, you know, Malcolm X, Kwame Ture, you know, and even Martin Luther King later on, you know, because he even admitted that he had felt that he had assimilated his people into a burning house.
Right.
You know, the idea that, you know, we need to, especially in this time, you know, we need to look beyond simply like going back to what was considered normal and recognizing that even what we had was normal was actually really awful.
Yeah.
And we have to,
incredibly awful.
Incredibly awful. And, we have to get back to the place where we have to get to a place where we have to see that, you know, this nation, even from its founding, even the things that we use to justify that it's some sort of good place in the world, that even its foundation is corrupt. And we have to, you know, we have to have the idea that if we're going to make things better, that that we have to fundamentally change the system.
Right.
Or, I mean, basically dismantle it. But I'm at the place where, like, you know, I want to see big things happen. I'll be doing my part to participate. But I mean, it's just, I think part of that is, holding, you know, I don't even know if you can hold the Democrats accountable at this point. You know, they've seemed pretty complicit with Trump as long as they're getting paid.
Seriously. So, organizers for the Good Trouble protests are saying that this effort on July 17th for the protests are in response to the most brazen rollback of civil rights in generations from the Trump administration. And for people who are interested in learning more about where the protests are and how to get involved, you can go to Good Trouble. Was it goodtroubleliveson.org? So that's goodtroubleliveson.org, all one thing. That's the domain.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm just going to say, you know, just one more thing. You know, it's, I was listening to that lady talking about how, you know, she was talking about the idea that, you know, her positivity coming not from like a toxic place, but my only pushback would say is that, you know, we have to, the reason why white supremacy has existed as long as it has, regardless of what few like mediocre steps have been made in the way of, you know, of giving Black and brown people some semblance of autonomy, is that white supremacy has been treated often as a problem that white people need to sympathize with Black and brown folks with, rather than something they need to solve.
Right. Well, and understand, that was my third interview with Brandy. I've known Brandy for a long time, and the reason why I asked to interview her so often is because in every time I've heard her speak, at every meeting I've heard her chime in every interview I've had with her, one, she is genuine. Everything complete comes from her heart. And in every single situation that has been placed in front of her, instead of saying, I'm sorry, we can't do anything, I don't know what to tell you, she says, we will find a way. And we will do it.
Yes.
And that is Brandy. And that is the reason why efforts in Oregon City are in a positive direction. And I think in all the time of being homeless in that area, in Clackamas or Multnomah County, I have only known a handful maybe of people of color. Everybody else that I've ever run into or known has been white.
Yes.
So white supremacy is a cancer on the entire population. And that's not dissing on people of color or anything like that, or people of other cultures, because we, of course, have seen where the othering is a real endemic cancer. But it is widespread across age, race, ethnicity, and everything. It's just more focused on people of color because it's been so much more horrible for them.
Oh, absolutely. No, I completely agree with you. It's kind of like how, like, patriarchy, while its primary target is women and non-men, trans folks, what have you, it is definitely a detriment to men. I say it to say, you know, like, you know, patriarchy has no gender, white supremacy has no color, because it's a way of being able to, it's a way of being able to disenfranchise everyone at the expense of, you know, at the, you know, for the benefit of the rich. And it gives a scapegoat, but it kills everyone.
Well, that's why way back as slaves were becoming free, the rich white people were telling the poor white people, oh, it's them. Those are the bad people. Those are white. Those are the people who have made the situation such that you are living the way you are. And they've gone through every ethnicity. It used to be Irish people. It used to be, it's always been black people, but added to that has been Irish people, Italian people, Japanese, Chinese, anybody who looks different from the male Christian white man.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
Thank you, absolutely. Santiago. I appreciate all your comments and your friendship and your listenership.
Yeah, no problem. Have a great day, Sherry.
You too. If you, I have a few more minutes. I can take calls for like one or two more minutes. I can only take like one more phone call because we're running short on time. And if you want to learn more about the protests happening tomorrow, go to goodtroubleliveson.org. If you want to know more about Brandi Johnson or the Father's Heart organization, the email or the they do have an email. If you would like to reach out via email, it's info@tfhsm.org. So that info@tfhsm.org is the email for the Father's Heart nonprofit out in Oregon City. I need to thank Ty for his work and his diligence and answering the phone and keeping me on track with everything we have going. If you want to help support us here at KBOO, you can go to kboo.fm and hit that donate button. I have one more caller coming in. I believe you can text KBOO to, I'm going to not do that. How about, because I don't have it in front of me and I don't have it on my phone, you can mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And I do have a phone call. Tangent. Hi, sir. How are you?
I'm great. And I wanted to tag on with Edie because it occurred to me that we are called humankind.
Yes. Yes.
Humankind.
Yes, we are.
And I like to add an E and make it humane beings. How about we can be humane beings?
Yes, we can.
And one other bit. Let's see. The way that, you know, human is spelled H-U, but we don't say human, we say hue, as in colors, yes?
Yes.
That includes all of us, yay.
I'm looking at that. You bring up some great points. I really appreciate your calling in and you listening. I was looking for...
The power that we have is the word, and we're a lot of words don't make any sense. We say inconvenient when it's really not, or inconvenient, and there's tons of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but even, you know, when you say, okay, like this, they call these people world leaders. No, in actuality, they're world followers.
Oh, my goodness. That is true.
They follow what the world dictates.
To some extent, I think in many times they avoid doing what the populations. I mean, look at Oregon. The reason why I fought so hard for campaign finance reform at the state level, and when I was, and I'm still a volunteer with Honest Elections, was because I had a notion that even if we got it on the ballot in November and it got voted through, which it would have, the legislature could still say no. Which they do many times. Look at what they did to Measure 110, right? They gutted it. And so, and that's...
One judge did that, right? One
yeah,
judge.
Basically.
Yeah, and, he outvoted millions of Oregonians.
Yeah, yeah. And granted, I think that that situation could have been resolved if people had actually been honest with their level of support for Measure 110 and wanting to actually work. Did you know that people can donate stock to KBOO? They can donate their vehicle or they can donate property. And that text is KBOO 244321. So you can donate that way too. That's KBOO 244321. That's the text. And you can email a check at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland 97214. So I had to get those right. And Tangent, you are fabulous. You bring up some great points.
So here's one just real quick. So what you said, like, what would you say to President Trump? And like, these people are in power. So then as soon as you say that, you give them more power.
Right.
I just say stop believing in them. They're not going to do what they say. They lie and get your vote. And
but they have the finger on the button, is my point.
Yeah, but you get, like, that's too scary.
But it's real. They have the finger on the button. Yeah, how do we get in front of them?
There's no point, you know, if that happens, all of what we're saying now is basically worthless, but...
Exactly. That's my point. We have to figure out a way to get in front of these people, get them out of office, and get people in office who care. You and I and many of our listeners lived through the Cold War. We were doing, for whatever reason, under our desk for a nuclear explosion, right? We had these trials that we grew up learning through the Cold War. Well, at somewhere in the late 80s, early 90s, it dawned on everybody that they love their children too. And it sounds like I'm going to be off the air. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Bye-bye. Thank you, Ty. Have a good day.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation.